Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'd like now to introduce Michael Jensen. He is from Amigos Bravos. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks again, Mary Charlotte. It's always nice to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. We do a show every once in a while to talk about water and a whole host of environmental issues in the state of New Mexico. Now, this is a particularly interesting and perhaps scary time for people who are concerned about the health of the environment in New Mexico. Susana Martinez, Republican governor, recently elected. What does the coming Martinez administration mean for environmental health and safety both of ecosystems and of the people who depend on them?
We think, Amigos Bravos and the environmental community in general, think that the coming administration and the changes in the legislature after the elections mean that we're going to be faced with a really hard time for some years to come. We expect that rules and regulations, legislation that have come out in the last few years will be rolled back. We think that a whole bunch
of... Or attempts will be made to roll them back in any case. You think they will be?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we always look at rollbacks every legislative session. It's a big part of the legislative activity of the environmental community is, you know, not putting forward our own proactive legislation, although we do that, but fighting rollbacks. It's not that rollbacks will be something new this session. We just think that there aren't going to be checks on legislation the way there have been in the past. In recent years, you know, we've been able to rely on environmentally friendly legislators in the House, for example, and House leadership to work to slow down or stop things that come out of the Senate, which has been, you know, much more anti-environmental lately. And if things did get through the legislature, you know, we've been able to go to the governor and ask him to veto particularly bad bills that came out. And that's not going to exist. There's not going to be a threat of a veto from Susana Martinez when it comes to rolling back regulations, because she's on the record during the campaign saying that she thought that there should be at least, you know, a moratorium on some kinds of regulations. And
what kind of regulations specifically does she think we shouldn't have?
She didn't have any specifics in her campaign, although it's telling that she didn't have anything on her website about the environment.
Yeah, there was nothing one way or the other.
Right. And so even during the debates, she didn't have anything specific, but, you know, just based on efforts that have been made in the past and what we've heard about, there are going to be efforts to gut or eliminate the Water Quality Control Commission, the Environmental Improvement Board, moving around some parts of the Environment Department and putting them into the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resource Department. And, you know, we could talk about why that wouldn't be a good idea. Killing or suspending the new cap and trade rule, the pit rule, the new dairy rule, maybe the 2006 Waters of the State rule, the outstanding natural resource water rule that's being heard by the Water Quality Control Commission, and that was heard by them on November 30th.
One thing that you can say just from listening to the list that you've been reading is that New Mexico has actually done a decent job in past years under the Richardson administration and,
yes,
and perhaps further back than that to some extent in actually taking a look at what our environmental problems are and doing things to deal with them.
Yes, I think that that's fair. I mean, it's not that Governor Richardson was, you know, everything that the environmental community wanted, but he was fairly open to listening to the environmental community's arguments about a particular piece of legislation or about something that we thought the governor's office should do. And even though he didn't always agree with us, we knew that he was listening to us. And we don't think that either of those things will be true under Susana Martinez's administration. We don't think that they'll listen to us. And we don't think that they'll, because they're not going to listen to us, we don't think that they'll take anything that we have to say into consideration and use that as a basis for implementing policy.
So what has the transition team been doing so far?
Well, Susana Martinez's transition team is headed by Heather Wilson. Heather Wilson cast herself and was often talked about in the media as, you know, one of the few moderate Republicans in Congress back when she was a representative. But on environmental issues, she didn't have a very good record. The League of Conservation Voters regularly put her in the dirty dozen for her approach to mining regulations, for example. And she was generally opposed to, putting more mining regulations in place, even though we've seen in the United States recently with the Upper Big Branch coal mine explosion that, if anything, we need a whole lot more regulation of mining industry than less regulation. And the same thing with the Gulf oil spill, which is another example where there are regulations in place, but the agency that's out there to implement them is so taken over by industry that it can't do an effective job. So the head, just from an environmentalist point of view, the head of the transition team isn't somebody who's going to look kindly on environmental concerns. And then if you get down to the committee that was put together to look for department heads for the New Mexico Environment Department to replace Ron Khoury, who's been a very good Secretary of the Environment, and for a new head of the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department, that committee was made up of industry people. There is nobody even remotely representing the environment on that committee. And so, we've heard names floated around for the head of the Environment Department, for example, who, like Walter Bradley, who works for the big dairy industry, these concentrated animal feeding operations, whose new rule is under consideration by the Water Quality Control Commission. And the dairy industry is adamantly opposed to that, even though they asked for it in 2009.
We'll get back to that in a moment. Let's just step back for a moment and look at the big picture. One of the things that is talked about a lot is the economy versus the environment. And I've always had my BS detectors alerted when I hear things like that, because it seems that there is an argument to be made that a good environment, namely clean drinking water, clean land, sustainably raised agriculture, both animal and plant and so on, would be good for the economy.
You would think. In New Mexico, first of all, we're the land of enchantment. So right at the outset, everybody talks about that. Having a clean environment is something that supposedly the state prides itself on, it markets itself on. And you can see that. Tourists come here because of the quality of landscape that they expect to see. Hunters and fishers come here from all over the world to fish in our streams, to hunt elk and other animals. People come here from all over the place to hike, to horseback, to raft. I mean, there's a huge amount of money that's based on tourism, that's based on the quality of that environment that those people are going to immerse themselves into. And then there are other components of economic aspects to having a clean environment, one of which is that if industry isn't being held responsible for messes it makes in the environment, then the state or local governments are going to be stuck with the cost of cleaning those up. So without effective regulations, one, to stop things from happening, and two, to make sure that those who cause the problems clean them up, no accountability, that's a cost that's going to be borne by the state.
What's an example of that, where a mess is made, it's not cleaned up, and then the taxpayers end up paying a lot of money for it?
Abandoned mines is a really big example. There are hundreds and hundreds of abandoned mines across the state and across the West. And those become the responsibility of government to clean up or to cover over or whatever.
What kind of toxins do they give off that harm people?
The problem with a lot of mining operations is that the pollution caused by the actual mining activity aside, once they're abandoned, water, if they're underground or even if they're surface mines, water gets into the mines. Water reacts with the minerals that are in those mines, and the chemicals that were used in the mining operations, and they start leaching toxics out of the mine and into the groundwater or the surface water or both. And
people get sick from drinking it.
If people are drinking the water, they could get sick. The aquatic life gets sick. So that's one example. Another example, right here in Albuquerque, where I live, in the South Valley, the lack of effective regulations on industry there leads to, you know, the fact that lots of industrial facilities are located right, you know, in the heart of residential areas, across from schools or community centers, and there's a huge problem with asthma among children, for example. And, you know, we're talking about a poor community, so those people are probably not going to have health insurance, so they're going to end up going to emergency rooms to take care of or urgent care facilities when their children get sick, and you know that cost gets picked up by the state. So you can go on and on and on about that. That down in areas where there's a lot of dairy activity, there's a lot of reports of people getting sick from both from water contamination, you know, getting into their drinking water, as well as from airborne contaminants, the dust that blows off of these dairy facilities that, you know, we're talking about dried manure and urine from the cattle and other things that are in that dust and causing respiratory problems for people downwind. So there's not a shortage of examples where there are costs to not effectively regulating industry, and loss of revenue and jobs from having a poor quality environment.
We're talking to Michael Jensen from Amigos Bravos. Let's talk about the dairy rule for a moment. You were mentioning a moment ago that the dairy industry actually asked for rules to be made?
Yes. In the 2009 legislative session, there was a bill passed that mandated that the dairy industry and the copper mining industry, have rules written for them that were specific to their industry. And this was a result of industry complaining that they shouldn't be regulated by rules that were generic or that came from other industries, for example, from hazardous waste rules, and have those apply to dairy, for example. There were a number of people from the environmental community who, I mean, you would think that we might be opposed to something like that because the industry is asking for it, but, you know, having rules that are specific to a particular industry is also a way to get more transparency and accountability, not just for the industry, but for the agency as well, because it makes it, presumably, it would make it much clearer exactly what's supposed to be done, and therefore much easier to see when it's not being done.
Now, with dairy, the average person who's never been to one of these large-scale dairies thinks, milking Bessie the cow, what could be wrong?
You know, the dairy industry here, and I mean all over the United States, advertises itself as, you know, you see these fields of green grass and wildflowers and some little kid out with or a family out with the cows, and everything's clean and idyllic, and, you know, that's just not the case. I mean, there are some dairies that look like that. There are not very many.
So what do they look like?
The dairies in New Mexico have the highest number of animals per operation of any state in the country. I'm sure a lot of people will find that very surprising. A lot of people don't even think about New Mexico as a dairy state, but production in New Mexico from dairies is fourth or fifth highest in the country. And part of the reason why that is because dairies that were located in California especially and a few other places in Central Texas moved to New Mexico when those areas instituted more stringent regulations because they were seeing lots of problems with runoff into streams, contamination of the groundwater, health impacts to communities in the neighborhoods of the dairies, and so on.
And so are we seeing all those same
things?
Yes,
we are, because according to statistics in the New Mexico Environment Department, and this is just where they can get statistics because they, not every dairy has monitoring wells or, they can't get good data sometimes from the wells that exist. But according to the Environment Department, at least two-thirds of the dairies in New Mexico have already contaminated groundwater for nitrates, which is the most significant contaminant.
And that's a carcinogen.
Well, if there are too many nitrates, yes, it is. And if there are too many nitrates in the groundwater and that groundwater gets into people's drinking water wells, because the dairies are located in rural areas, a lot of people are pump their water from wells, domestic wells. So if you drink it, it can cause what used to be called, maybe it still is, blue baby syndrome. You can turn blue because you're not getting enough oxygen in your blood. And there are reports from people in dairy communities where they've seen that happen to, their children, for example. If you include other contaminants of groundwater, the Environment Department estimates that maybe as many as 90% of the dairies have contaminated the groundwater for, one or more contaminants that have standards applied to them. And then there's a whole range of other things that don't have standards that the Environment Department doesn't monitor for. One of them that Amicus Bravos has been concerned about is pharmaceuticals, because it's widely documented that dairies, not just in New Mexico but across the country, over medicate their animals. They give them antibiotics on a daily basis because it helps increase the milk production. But in the process, the animals excrete all this unnecessary antibiotic out of their system. And so it gets into the soil, it gets into the holding ponds for manure and leaches into the groundwater. And it also gets into, the milk we drink and in some cases the meat we eat, because dairy cattle who are, past their prime and aren't producing anymore get sold off. And there are cases, the Food and Drug Administration can't do a regular monitoring all over the place, but there are cases, recent ones, where they have done at least what look like spot checks and have found cases where they've cited dairies in New Mexico for using too many antibiotics. Because the other thing they do is just before an animal's going out for slaughter is pump it up with a whole bunch of antibiotics to kill whatever's in it that's come from hanging out in, manure all its life.
Precisely because they're not out romping in the fields.
No. Basically, if you go to one of these large dairy operations, they're called concentrated animal feeding operations or confined animal feeding operations. What you find is a very large number of animals in a very small space, both outdoors and indoors. And they, outdoors, they're walking around in all of their manure. And then indoors, those indoor facilities get cleaned out, the manure gets collected, but they're still covered in it. And there's actually, they've got sort of visual checks that, dairy operators are supposed to use. And I've seen some of these, charts where you sort of say, well, this animal, is relatively manure-free, and, this one has too much manure on it, and so on. So you're supposed to try to keep them clean. But earlier this year, I and Dan Lorimer from the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club were on a tour of dairies down in Dairy Row in Mesilla, Mesquite, down by Las Cruces. It was part of a Legislative Finance Committee meeting. They were going to be shown around by the dairy, so we went down. It's a public meeting. And one of the places we went was a milking parlor. So there were animals standing there on these circulars or turntables waiting to be milked, and you know, the operator took the milking device that has, you know, a bunch of suction devices on it that he puts on the teats of the cow, and they just swab the cow really quickly. I mean, it's not going to clean her off. And, you know, he's trying to attach these things as quickly as he can. You know, sometimes they don't grab hold. They drop down onto the ground, which is covered with, you know, manure and, you know, urine and feces from these cows. And then he just sticks them back on again. It's not a very sanitary operation, I have to tell you. And this was when they knew that they were going to be, you know, have this group of legislators and others coming through. So, you know, it sort of makes you wonder what goes on when there aren't people looking at what's going on.
And which I have may or may not get into your milk, which is, of course, pasteurized.
Right. But there are some things, you know, that get through those sorts of processes. I mean, that's why people are concerned about hormones in their milk, for example, because those, you know, pass through. And so some people want milk products and other products that, you know, are hormone-free or are growth, you know, like growth hormones. The other thing to say is that, you know, this is the Environment Department was just looking at groundwater contamination as far as, you know, evidence for why they, you know, wanted to pursue certain kinds of regulations under this new dairy rule. But all of those dairy facilities down in Derry Row are also under abatement plans from the Environmental Protection Agency for surface water runoff that's causing contamination as well. So, you know, I mean, it's a huge problem.
Well, another part of the problem that you expressed a moment ago is when one state makes a rule, then people who are running a dirty operation go to another state, or indeed when one country makes the rule, makes labor laws or whatever, right, corporations move their people to another country.
Right.
And it does speak to the need for shared nationwide and in some cases worldwide shared rules and standards of ethics, cleanliness, and basic moral, ethical, and just plain old environmental standards.
Right. Now, the fact that some dairies move from California because of regulations is something that, you know, the industry points to all the time when there are regulations being proposed or changes in regulations. You know, if you regulate us, you know, we're just going to move. Well, California is still leading dairy state, even though a bunch of the dairies left. And frankly, a lot of those dairies that left, they sold their operations to developers for a huge amount of money, and that allowed them to come to New Mexico and set up here. In the long run, they didn't really suffer. You know, they came to New Mexico, which has a climate that's almost ideal for dairy, from everything I've read literature by the New Mexico dairy industry, because it doesn't get too cold in the winter. It's not overly hot in the summer. Cows can keep up their production. That's why production is so high here.
So, it may be that those dairies did well, but let's say New Mexico, I mean, just to play the other side of it, let's say New Mexico were to make rules regulating dairy in such a way that it was minimally burdensome on them, but really did address the health and safety of the New Mexicans living around these dairies. And those dairies said, oh, we're going to go to Arizona, or we're going to go to someplace else where there's a hospitable climate, or Texas or whatever. What would that mean for the economy of this state?
Well, I mean, the dairy industry is pretty large in New Mexico, so if they all got up and left, it would be a big deal. But they're not going to get up and leave. One, you know, a lot of other places have already put in regulations, so there's not too many places left for them to go. And two, like I said, you know, conditions here are really good. So cost of production for them are lower here than they would be other places, because they can get more production for the same amount of money. And if you look at, you know, the cost structure for the dairy industry, for example, at least half of their cost is just feeding their animals. And then there's a bunch of other facilities maintenance costs and things like that. If you, you know, I've seen a breakdown of costs to the dairy industry, and environmental compliance is not one of those bullet items. You know, it's not a line item for them.
Well, how much would environmental regulation cost? And even more to the point, what kind of regulation are we even talking about?
Okay, so the biggest issues for the dairy industry, for example, that the Environment Department wanted was they wanted more monitoring wells, and they wanted them in places that would assure, you know, better measurements of potential contamination. And they wanted synthetic liners for all of the manure ponds and a number of other things. But those were sort of the two biggest issues, you know, monitoring wells and lagoons that had synthetic liners on them.
Now, so that nitrates and other...
Synthetic liners...
So that some kind of negative toxic chemistry doesn't leak out into the groundwater.
Right. And the Citizens Coalition, of which Amigos Bravos was part of, wanted some additional things. We wanted the dairies, new ones, to start off with, and then other ones, as they had their permits reissued, we wanted them to put up financial assurance bonds or some kind of financial assurance. There are lots of different ways to do it, to make sure that if a dairy went out of business, that there'd still be some money around to clean up. And we wanted this especially because the dairy industry was complaining, in 2009 and into 2010 about how bad economic conditions were for them and that any kind of new regulations would bankrupt them. Now, what they didn't say is that, you know, the drop in 2009 was from absolute all-time record high prices for milk. So in the big scheme of things, it wasn't a huge loss. And it's the dairy industry's own fault that they can't find a way to sort of regulate themselves. And so you end up with these 2 or 3 year cycles of sort of booming prices and collapse prices and booming prices and collapse prices. It has nothing to do with regulations at all.
We're talking to Michael Jensen from Amigos Bravos. So one of the things you talked about earlier when we started our conversation today was that the Martinez administration transition team has been making some recommendations about consolidating different departments of state government. What do you know? What do we know so far?
Well, the Martinez administration's transition team is sort of doing its own evaluation of how to restructure government agencies. But there's also this government restructuring task force that's been meeting this year. And they have come out with a number of proposed recommendations and already a couple of draft bills that to start moving on some of these. And, you know, the environmental community got together to make sure that we had our voice heard in this whole process and sent a memo to the candidates, to Diane Dennis and to Susana Martinez. This was back in October 12th, like almost a month before the election, and also to key members of the government restructuring task force, saying, we don't oppose the idea of restructuring. We just want to make sure that it's not done in a way that harms the ability to protect the environment and the public health.
Yeah, so for example, in that memo, one of the examples that you had mentioned that there are some tasks performed by the Environment Department that could be better put under public health.
Right, or combining them in some way. For example, there are, here, let me grab this really quickly so I can make sure that I get it right. But we thought that, for example, environmental health and epidemiology could be, combined, or field aspects of the two agencies could be combined, things like that. And occupational health and safety, or the public health inspections for restaurants and things like that, could go to the health department, not be in the environment department.
Right.
I mean, there's some sort of very common sense kinds of things.
But that's not what they're coming out with.
Well, the biggest concern for us was with the two main agencies that the environmental community deals with, which are the Environment Department, of course, and then the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department. And to to make a gross overgeneralization, basically the Environment Department sort of regulates industry and the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department sort of promotes industry. And so we see that as a necessary process where you've got some oversight so that the agency that's trying to promote mining or oil and gas drilling, you know, things like that, isn't at the same time supposed to regulate those activities because it generates an inherent...
The fox regulating the hen house.
Yeah, it's an inherent sort of conflict of interest.
Right.
And so we think it's fine if there's an agency whose, you know, goal, you know, a department whose goal is to, you know, enhance, you know...
Well, like the tourism department.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but, you know, to do those things that would generate income and jobs and things like that in the state, but there needs to be that sort of separate oversight function that comes from the Environment Department.
So are you saying that they want to combine those
two? We propose, the environmental community proposed that that there might be some functions in the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resource Department that could maybe move over to the Environment Department because they have sort of more of a regulatory function than a sort of economic development function, and like maybe the, you know, or have some kind of dual role, and like the Oil Conservation Division or the Mining and Minerals Division or something like that that does kind of a little bit of both. That there could be ways to get some sort of consolidation, but what it appears now is that this government restructuring task force, and from everything that we've seen of the Martinez administration, we assume that her administration will go along with this, is to go in the exact opposite direction, to take those parts of the Environment Department that regulate industries within the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resource Department, to move those over to EMNRD. Like the Surface Water Quality Bureau or the Groundwater Quality Bureau, and that just is so completely wrong. It shows such a lack of understanding of recent events, let alone, you know, countless you know, examples from many, many decades. Let alone, you know, what was happening.
Are you talking about recent events? You're talking about, for example,
the Gulf oil spill. Which was. In part, you know, aside from whatever responsibility individual companies had for, you know, ignoring things that they shouldn't have ignored or trying to go too fast, you know, not following procedures, the larger picture was that the agency whose task was to regulate deep offshore drilling was a captive of industry.
Yeah.
And wasn't doing its job. And
the coal mine explosion.
The one I mentioned before, the Upper Big Branch mine. That was, you know, that's an even worse example because the, you know, Mine Safety Agency has, you know, been accused for years and decades of being a complete captive of the industry and not doing its job. I don't think that that's entirely fair. But they don't have any teeth, you know. That particular mine was cited on an almost daily basis for not following rules and regulations. It's just that the agency didn't have the teeth to follow up on all of those citations and shut the mine down. And you know, that's the kind of thing that is so scary about these proposals for that are coming out of the government. A restructuring task force, and that we also think will just get reinforced or even amplified by the Martinez administration.
And that could result in sickness and death among workers and citizens.
Yes, and to, you know, gross harm to the environment. You know, if and you know, it's not just the environment, but, you know, they're proposing, for example, there's a list, you know, that you can get on the legislative website, but, you know, they want to make a Construction Industries Commission or the Manufactured Housing Commission or the Occupational Health and Safety Committee, you know, those things, they want to eliminate them or just make them advisory and not rulemaking. The Cultural Properties Review Committee, which people probably don't think of very much from an environmental point of view. They want to turn that into a technical advisory committee, not have it review every project. But you know, the Mount Taylor was just recently designated a cultural property, and it was done so because the Pueblos and the Navajos Nation, who all see Mount Taylor as a sacred site, asked for it to be considered, just like churches all over the state and the country are designated cultural properties. The issue with that is that there's a lot of uranium mining and others mining, but uranium mining on and around Mount Taylor. And that led to a huge uproar, and it got extremely nasty. And on the part of those who wanted to have this cultural property designation killed. And so, you know, in some ways, this is probably sort of payback. Well, we'll just, you know, gut the capabilities of the Cultural Properties Review Committee. And that has, in this case, you know, a direct impact on the environment, because that, you know, designating the upper part of Mount Taylor as a cultural property meant that any kind of mining activity would have to go through another layer of review to make sure that it didn't have an impact on that cultural property.
The kind of things that you're talking about right now, does the public have anything to say about this?
You know, the recommendations of the task force or the task force meetings were, you know, open to the public. I mean, there was a place for public input. But I'm sure that most people were, or almost everybody probably wasn't aware of what it was doing, and don't know what the you know, recommendations coming out of it might be, or if there are recommendations, how those might get implemented. Because a lot of them are going to have to go to the legislature, because they're going to require changes to the Constitution, perhaps, or legislative approval to change the nature of an agency that was set up by the legislature originally. It's going to change.
So none of these things are done deals that can be implemented with the stroke of the governor's pen, or maybe some of them are, but many of them have to go through a public process.
Right. They're going to have to get changed in the legislature, although to the extent that some of these are just creations of the governor's office, you know, the governor will be able to go in and make changes as, you know, she sees fit. For the environmental community, you know, the recommendations that have come out most recently are, like I just mentioned a little while ago, was, you know, moving Environment Department bureaus to the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resource Department rather than, so putting an oversight function into the, you know, the promotional agency rather than going the other direction, which is what the environment community wanted, taking those components of oversight that were within Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources and moving them over to the oversight department.
Right.
So, and then the other big thing that could have a lot of impact on the environment is proposals to either is to merge the Department of Game and Fish with the State Parks Division, which is actually something that the environmental community also suggested as a possibility. But another recommendation came out would be to repeal the State Game Commission. So, you know, you're going to lose a little bit of oversight and perhaps transparency on that merger. And then an option that is even worse is a suggestion that maybe this merged Department of Game and Fish and State Parks would then become part of the Commerce Department, in which case, you know, the mandate of the Commerce Department is going to be, you know, revenue and jobs. And so it's going to open up these, you know, this Department of Game and Fish, which has a regulatory function, to being entirely one of, you know, sort of promoting income generating activities, you know, in the state. And we think,
which is a conflict of interest, because part of what State Parks is about is recreation and getting away from commerce and all of that.
Right. I mean, we could see, for example, there was, you know, there's been a lot of struggle, you know, sort of conflict in the, you know, the last couple of years over the role of off-highway vehicles, for example, you know, four-wheelers and all that sort of stuff, where they can and can't go. And, you know, the advocates of the from the industry and, you know, a lot of users is, you know, we have a right to go everywhere that anybody else can go. You know, if you can walk it or, you know, whatever, then we can take our OHVs there. And or even go, you know, off-roading. And the environmental community and others, a lot of tourism sort of industries have pushed back against that and said there's a fundamental difference between somebody on, you know, a four-wheeler, which makes a lot of noise and generates a lot of dust, you know, being somewhere, and somebody
walking,
riding a horse, bicycling, you know, doing mountain biking or something like that, and that they shouldn't be allowed to go everywhere. Because people need an opportunity for what's called quiet recreation,
right,
without thinking that it could be interrupted at any moment.
Right.
And in addition, people with those vehicles often, you know, don't follow the rules. We know.
I've seen them in the dog park.
Well, you know, they don't stay on roads. They cut across meadows, you know, which are fragile ecosystems. Tear down gates and barriers so they can go places where, you know, where they're not supposed to go. And so we just think that regulations should be even more stringent than they are, and that they should be, you know, clearly designated places. So, yeah, that kind of conflict will be there, and that function of sort of limiting them will disappear.
We're talking to Michael Jensen from Amigos Bravos. At this point, how unified is the environmental community in terms of all the organizations that are working on the kinds of issues that we've been talking about this hour? And how aware is the public of the, I would venture to say, major fights that we have coming in the next 4 years if we want to maintain a clean, safe, and healthy New Mexico?
You know, there are parts of the public that I know, you know, from talking to them, who are extremely aware of the kinds of things that we've been talking about and are very concerned about it. But I think a large part of the public isn't aware of, you know, what the consequences of Susana Martinez's victory, combined with the increase in the number of Republicans in the House, for example, where the margin now is only, you know, 37 Democrats to 33 Republicans. The Republicans picked up 6 seats, and which has opened up the door to a move by some conservative Democrats to form an alliance with the Republicans, which would sort of give that fiscally conservative, anti-regulatory sort of bloc enough power to really change the direction that things have been going in recent years in the House in terms of sort serving as a sort of check on some of this bad, you know, rollback legislation. So I think a lot of people aren't aware of that. And I think a lot of people, you know, in this sort of Tea Party, you know, throw all the incumbents out, you know, individual freedom kind of thing, probably think that what happened is a good thing. Yeah, let's get rid of, you know, regulations. Let's, you know, let the so-called free market reign, and everything will be good. The, you know, problem with that is that...
it doesn't work,
well,
if I may say so.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, the problem is, you know, we are all individuals, of course, sure. You know, I mean, that's just trite and, you know, a truism. But the other thing that people forget is that we all live in communities, and that we have some obligation to our neighbors to either not do things that screw up their individualism, you know, rights to enjoy whatever. So to do no harm to them, but also to do things that help them if they need help. And that actually, you know, sort of the what has become the function of government is to make sure that people don't screw up things for their neighbors, and to help people out when they can't do it themselves for whatever reason.
Now, what about the environmental community, the various organizations like Amigos Bravos and other people that we talk to, Wild Earth Guardians, yeah. New Energy Economy, and so on? Are you all talking to each other?
We talk to each other. I think that we aren't talking to each other. We haven't been talking to each other enough in recent years. I mean, we're always talking to each other on specific pieces of legislation or things like that, you know, to get support for a specific cause of one organization or another. And, you know, Amigos Bravos is, just as an example, always looks to form alliances or coalitions around an issue that involve not just other environmental organizations, but especially community organizations from those communities that are impacted by, you know, mining or, you know, contamination from Los Alamos National Lab or whatever. What I think has sort of fallen down in the last couple of years is that sort of more general open-ended collaboration where we're constantly talking to each other and keeping each other informed about what's going on and coordinating outreach and sort of media efforts. You know, there's a thing called the Environmental Alliance of New Mexico, which actually has been around for a while with kind of without a name. But it named itself a few years ago in order to kind of do that, to have a name that the media could use, that we could use when we're, you know, talking to the public about some of these, you know, proactive pieces of legislation that we put forward or a lot of this anti-rollback stuff. But the level of participation in the Environmental Alliance is what I've noticed has dropped off in the last a couple of years.
What type of a grassroots movement involving both citizens and environmental organizations do you think it'll take to avoid the worst consequences of New Mexico's government being a virtual extension of the oil, gas, and minerals industries?
You know, I think that what we all, you know, as individual organizations and as a collective, you know, called the environmental and public health community, what we're going to have to do is just reach out, each of us on our own and then collaboratively to the communities that we represent, our constituents, and just make a huge effort to engage or re-engage citizens in the legislative process. In, you know, the media of all sorts, you know, print and radio and electronic, you know, and just, you know, in some ways start all over again.
All over again, meaning going back to the 60s and 70s?
Like, you know, what got, like what started Earth Day or what got the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act passed, and the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency, which, you know, some people you know, probably think has always been there, but hasn't. I mean,
yeah.
That took a lot of effort, and it took, you know, some really nasty things happening to get that effort going, and that may be what, you know, happens here. Some nasty things may have to happen, but we need to get out, as environmentalists and people concerned about public health, we have to get out ahead of things. And that's an opportunity. I know this program has been kind of a downer maybe, but it's an opportunity that for all of us in the environmental community and public health community to sort of get re-energized and start being a lot more focused on collaboration and education.
And above all, doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Michael Jensen is with Amigos Bravos. They can be found on the web at amigosbravos.org. And their phone number in Taos is 575-758-1035. Michael, thanks for being with us again on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.